Next is 2022-0121 in the matter of the State of Ohio versus Tyler Williams. Good morning, Mr. Galyard.
Good morning, Your Honor. Chief Justice Kennedy, may it please the court, reserve 3 minutes, please. We're here to determine who suffers under Ohio's inmate speedy trial statute when the inmate satisfies all statutory mandates and the warden fulfills none. The statute's language does not answer this precise question, but the language is clear regarding the express obligations for both the inmate and the warden. The inmate must cause delivery of written notice to the prosecutor and court via the warden. Both delivery and the specific means of delivery are explicitly imposed upon the inmate. That is what is missing from the lower court's interpretation. It is not just get it there. It is get it there by the warden. And then the warden, upon receipt of the inmate's written notice, must complete the certificate and promptly mail the notice and certificate to the court and prosecutor by certified or registered mail, return receipt requested. The warden is the sole source of delivery to the prosecutor and court that is provided by the statute. These express obligations demonstrate that the inmate cannot satisfy the entirety of the statute by his or herself. It is incompatible with the statutory language to hold an inmate responsible for failed obligations that are explicitly assigned by the statute to the warden. For this reason, Dillon and its rationale is instructive, if not dispositive. There, giving effect to all the words of the statute, this court held that permitting a warden or superintendent to avoid complying with the duty imposed by Ohio's inmate speedy trial statute would circumvent the purpose of the statute and relieve the state of its legal burden to try cases within the time constraints imposed by law.
Can you answer a question for me? Why did the Department of Corrections think that it needed to send a letter to the Lorain County Sheriff saying that the record office has been informed by the inmate, Mr. Williams, that there may be outstanding charges? Please send us a copy, if warranted, of your order so we may assist you in placing a valid detainer. What is that normal procedure?
I can't answer that. I don't know whether the prosecution could. In terms of what DRC does, perhaps there's two simultaneous pursuits. One is let's make the sheriff aware, and then let's make the court and the prosecutor aware. But I don't know that inner policy or approach by DRC. We ask this court to apply the Dillon holding and rationale and vacate the decision below.
So let me ask, so if you read the Fex opinion, which I know dealt with a different statute, but essentially the same language, what Justice Scalia says there is, respondent argues that no one can have caused something to be delivered unless delivery in fact occurs. This is self-evidently true, and so we must reject petitioner's contention that a petitioner's transmittal of an IAD request to prison authorities commences the 180 period, even if the request gets lost in the mail and is never delivered to the state. Now, that seems, to me, that seems hard to argue that one can't cause, hard to disagree with, that one cannot cause something to be delivered unless it actually is delivered. How do you get around that? I mean, you say that giving effect to all the language of the statute, but you seem to be ignoring the triggering event for the time clock. So,
respectfully, I disagree, Your Honor. There are a few responses. First, FEX is interpreting similar but different language. That's one.
Okay, well, but there is no difference in the cause something to be delivered language, correct? The word I just quoted.
That's correct, Your Honor. If you look at the statute, there's no hierarchy or order. They're all shall dictates. So they're all equal. So that part that says cause delivery to the prosecutor in court is equal with the part that provides the means. So that dictate there says cause delivery to happen. But there is an equal place in the statute that tells the inmate how to make delivery.
So all those things have to happen before speedy trial clock starts to run. It seems to be the import of the plain language of the statute.
To reach that conclusion, this court would have to overrule Dillon. Because in Dillon, the warden did not provide the inmate with the indictment. And what this court held was when the warden failed that statutory obligation, the speedy trial clock began at the time of that failure.
Should we draw any distinction with facts for the fact that it was in a broader context of interstate relations, whereas the state of Ohio can't order a warden in another state to do something, but here the warden is an agent of the state of Ohio, and which is the same entity that prosecutes the defendant. Is that, are we able to distinguish FECS on that basis?
Absolutely, and there are also other ways to distinguish FECS. In FECS, delivery actually occurred. So FECS was only answering a timing issue.
Right, before he got to the timing issue, the court was very clear that if delivery had not occurred, then there would not even be an argument.
And that portion of FECS is dicta, because the facts before that court
Fair.
Was that delivery occurred. So that's a distinguishing feature. Justice Bruner's question is a distinguishing feature. The fact that this is Ohio's own statute governing Ohio's statute is a distinguishing feature. And
the statute would be illusory if we were to require the inmate to protect his or her constitutional rights or statutory rights to speedy trial. Does everything that he or she needs to do, but can let an agent of the state rest on his or her laurels, and the statute would have no meaning.
That's correct, Your Honor. And another way to state that would be that you'd be reading out of the statute all the language establishing the explicit shall obligations on the warden.
Well, would you be really reading it out, or just saying that the particular agent of the state, the warden in this case, simply didn't comply? And then what's the remedy for that?
Correct. And I would point, Your Honor, back to Dillon and how that operated. But if we look at the entirety of the language and what this statute is for, there was speedy trial protection in common law for inmates. And there is a century of precedent from this court speaking about the elevated status of statutory speedy trial protections. And when we read the statute, again, all of these dictates are equal weight. And if they're all equal weight, they all need to be considered because of the common,
That's universally true. They all need to be considered, but what's the remedy for failure of one of those components to not take place?
It's the purpose of the statute. It's the speedy trial protection, just like in Dillon. I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Ms. Poprocky, good morning.
Good morning. Chief Justice Kennedy, and may it please the court, Lindsay Poprocky on behalf of the state of Ohio. Three key concepts govern this appeal: notice, delivery, and receipt.
Because counsel, if a prisoner goes ahead and delivers to the warden the notice, and the warden doesn't do anything, does the prisoner have any obligation or any right to, like, a mandamus or something, to force the warden to do something? I mean, what's the prisoner's rights at that point? The warden just says, yeah, I see it. I'm not sending it.
Your Honor, I believe that was addressed in one of the cases, in FECS maybe, and that wasn't necessarily a viable solution under the IAD.
Right.
And we would say—
Well, that's why I'm asking, what is the viable solution to support your position?
We would submit here that the plain language of the statute places the duty on the inmate to cause the notice to be delivered to the prosecutor and the state.
The statute also places duties on the warden. So I think Justice Fisher's question is, so if the remedy when the warden violates a statute is not that speedy trial clock starts, then what is the remedy? I mean, is this just completely, you just think this is just completely a dead letter? It says the warden shall. So what is the remedy if the warden doesn't do what the statute says he shall do?
This statute has been declared to be unambiguous in two cases.
That's not really my question.
Okay.
The question is, what is the remedy? You have to have thought of this, right? If the warden doesn't do what he's required to do by the statute, what remedy does the prisoner have?
There is no remedy in the statute as it's written for the defendant inmate.
So this is so as far as what it says, when it says the warden shall, that part of the statute is just meaningless.
The remedy is provided to the 100-day clock is triggered to actual delivery.
I understand that. I'm asking, and I think Justice DeWine's asked the same question. It says the warden, quote, who shall promptly forward it with a certificate of to the appropriate prosecuting attorney in court by registered mail, blah, blah, blah. If they don't do that, what right does the prisoner have to get a remedy? Or how would they get a remedy? If you say there's no remedy, then you're saying those words have no meaning. Do those words have no meaning?
I believe they do have meaning.
And what do they mean if the warden just says, I'm not sending it?
The warden is obligated to send and mail those.
And if he or she doesn't, then what's the remedy?
The remedy is that the failure to deliver is, there must be actual delivery to the prosecutor and the state.
That's not my question. My question, what is the remedy for the prisoner if the warden just says, I'm not sending it?
You can concede if you can't come up with one.
I don't want to concede because actual delivery is the standard under the statute.
No, you're not conceding that point. I get that. But if you cannot come up with a remedy.
Okay.
So what further obligation does the prisoner have? Whether it's a remedy or an obligation, it's been phrased both ways. Just trying to help here.
Okay. The duty is on the inmate to provide the notice to the warden.
And the inmate did that.
The trial court found that the inmate provided his notice to the warden, yes.
Then where do we go? Then what else?
Go back to the first clause of the statute, which provides that.
So the inmate did his part to cause to be delivered.
I would dispute that.
That he didn't do his part?
Not that he didn't do his part in providing the notice to the warden. I would dispute that he satisfied the first portion of the statute, which is that he caused to be delivered the notice and request for disposition to the prosecutor and the appropriate court.
And how would he do that if the warden just says, I'm not sending the letter? He provides the notice, the warden says, I'm not sending it on.
So in other words, how could the inmate comply with the second part of the statute?
How could he cause delivery if the warden says, I'm not sending it?
And it would require the certification as well. So how do you do that?
So Hairston addressed a situation like this, and Hairston was clear in its dictate that the statute does not get triggered until the inmate causes. Hairston was clear in its dictate that 2941.401 places a duty on the inmate to cause the notice and request for disposition to be delivered on the prosecutor and the state. The prosecution's corresponding duty does not get triggered until that request is actually received by the prosecutor and the court.
But counsel, doesn't the language requiring certification, doesn't that evidence an intent by the legislature that that third component would take place because of if the warden fulfilled that statutory obligation of sending certified notice?
It also places heightened emphasis on the fact that the notice and request for disposition actually be received and delivered.
And that's why they put in that it has to be take place by certified mail, so you'd have evidence of that fact.
Yes, but it also links back to the first portion of the statute, which says that the inmate must cause the notice and request for disposition to be delivered.
So the inmate has to monitor in every case and make sure that the warden carries out his or her statutory duties.
We're not requesting that the inmate monitor the mail system, no. But the way that the statute is written, as it stands, is that the inmate caused the...
But why are you... Why is the inmate the only person who has a requirement under the statute that he fulfills, but that the warden's component or the state's component, which is clearly in the statute also, can be totally disregarded? You only want one part of the statute to be adhered to.
First, I would look to the first portion of the statute, okay, and then the second to last portion of the statute, which okay, is the 180-day language talking about the dismissal provision. And the 180-day dismissal provision is only tied to the delivery portion, speaks to the delivery portion of the statute, where dismissal is tied to actual delivery. A case can only be dismissed.
The language of the statute doesn't say the inmate shall deliver, and it doesn't say when a certain entity the language of the statute could have been written such that the complete onus was on the inmate, but it wasn't. So it says inmate shall cause, which seems to at least mean that initiation has to come from the inmate. The inmate does his part. The inmate shall cause to be delivered. So he initiates his part, then there's a litany of things that have to take place, mm-hmm, over which, and I hope you can see, the inmate has absolutely no control. Can't certify, can't make the warden do anything. So does his part. So you're saying that the General Assembly wrote a statute that a warden can thwart at any time with no remedy and no consequences, and an inmate can't get the statutory speedy trial time, set forth. Yeah, he does his part, and that's all he can do, and it can be totally thwarted. So the statute has no meaning for the inmate.
I would cite again to, as Justice DeWine cited to, the IED, and I'm not saying that the statute has no meaning, but the Hairston Court and this court have compared the Art 2941.401 to the IED, and opposing counsel has done so as well, and this court has said that those statutes are virtually identical in analysis, and the FEX court has also required that there be actual delivery to satisfy the statute. And we're just...
You're saying it is what it is, but you seem to be uncomfortable with the position. Am I?
I'm not uncomfortable with the position. I think the statute is unambiguous in that it requires actual delivery and it requires that.
But how can the inmate do that?
The inmate has to go through the warden to provide notice to the warden.
So the inmate cannot satisfy the statute by himself.
But the statute does not provide for a remedy as it is written for failure by the warden.
If the prisoner just sent a letter notice to the prosecuting attorney court, that's not good enough, right?
That does not satisfy the statute either.
So this is an absolute catch-22. The inmate is up the creek if he does, and up the creek if he doesn't. If the inmate sends it to the warden like the statute requires, there's no guarantee that this warden is going to comply and it will be delivered. If the inmate himself, nicely typed, 12-point font, double space, sends it to the court, sends it to the prosecutor, court and prosecutor could say, statute says it's got to come from the warden. He's out of luck there, too. There is no way for the inmate to protect his speedy trial rights by this statute. So that's essentially what we have, right?
And I would suggest that these arguments are better placed and better suited for the legislature who has crafted this statute, that to impart a warden mistake rule into the statute at this point where it does not exist.
Do we know that it's a warden mistake? Do we know it's a warden mistake?
We do not know. It's a warden error, a warden failure.
Okay.
Be it
and the statute
is.
Say the warden, quote, shall promptly forward it, close quote?
Yes.
Is there anything in the record shown he promptly forwarded this notice?
No, it's undisputed that the state and that the prosecutor and the appropriate court did not receive the...
No, that's a different question. Okay.
Okay.
I asked, is there any evidence in the record that the warden promptly forwarded it? Maybe it didn't get to him. Is there any record that the warden promptly forwarded it?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
So do we take into account the fact that Mr. Williams made three requests of the warden, sought a personal meeting with the warden, and when transferred to Richland Correctional Institute, was having his mother follow up to see if the warden had sent this on? Is that something we take into account or not?
That would go into a substantial compliance argument as to whether he was seeking to comply with the statute. And under this court's precedent, I don't believe that it's strict compliance under this court's precedent in Hairston. And I believe in Dillon. And I don't believe that this court has to overrule Dillon to reach a conclusion for the state, because Dillon also dealt with the statute and found that it was unambiguous and showed that notice is important. And it found that because the inmate didn't receive written notice of the indictment, there was no strict compliance. So notice is important. Notice to the state is important. And here there was no notice, and the prosecutor and the court did not receive Williams' notice and request for disposition. It was not put on notice that it was required to initiate its speedy
trial.
Are
the warden, the prosecutor, and the court, are they all agents or components of the state?
Yes.
So the warden was put on notice.
The warden was put on notice, but the statute requires that the state...
Isn't the warden part of the executive branch of the state?
Yes.
So the state was put on notice by Mr. Williams through his correspondence. Why can't that be imputed? We impute police officers' actions to the state. We impute prosecutors' actions to the state. Why couldn't notice to the warden be imputed to the state?
That is a question for this court to determine, and it would be whether this court would be willing to create a substantial compliance standard into the statute, legislated in on its own, or stay with the strict compliance standard that it has already maintained. With that, I would ask that the Ninth District's decision be affirmed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Gallert.
The argument to this point is made clear that the respective positions are understood. I'll highlight two things. The warden knowledge here and in Dillon explicitly differentiate it from Hairston. The warden in Hairston had no clue, and this court made that a big component of its holding. The other big part, which differentiates here, is that the inmate did nothing in Hairston. The inmate did not provide notice, didn't tell a staff member. The inmate did nothing to start this process. And we know that that's drastically different than here, as Justice Bruner laid out all the steps that Mr. Williams took. And that's important. Mr. Williams continually did what the statute empowered him to do over and over and over. And because of that, the holding from Dillon that permitting a warden or superintendent to avoid complying with the duty imposed by the statute would circumvent the purpose of the statute and relieve the state of its legal burden to try cases within the time constraints imposed by law. That also answers the remedy question, because this statute is in place to have teeth to create speedy trials. And without this operation, it doesn't do so.
Is there any remedy besides the speedy trial provision?
There's none provided by the statute.
Right, but mandamus, is that you can't do a mandamus?
Well, that would be a remedy as to the statutory obligations, but it would not be a remedy as to the purpose of the speedy trial protections, which this entire statute gets to, which is inmate, do these things, and you're going to get the protection. If the warden can thwart that, mandamus is not any protection as to the time component. And the purpose of this statute is tied to that time. Again, the Dillon holding expressly gets to that, where the warden should not be allowed to thwart under the specific shall dictates language in this statute. We ask this court to apply the Dillon holding and rationale here to vacate the decision below and reinstate the trial court's dismissal. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll get a decision in the mail. Thank you so much.